Trader stood by the idling attack wag and watched the Scavvy and Harley walk out of the tree line. Marsh Folsom was soaking wet and struggled to pull on the shirt Trader had given him. Harley walked behind the man with a snake draped over her shoulders.
Well, the snake explains all the yelling.
Trader nodded.
Maybe, but those two make me tired.
You could separate them.
Trader shook his head.
Harley doesn't trust Marsh, and she doesn't like him. She'll watch him close, even if things get complicated, to see if she can catch him at something so she can beat on him.
You worried he'll try to get away?
He tried last night, even after you took care of him.
Basari's lips quirked a little, but she stopped short of smiling. Trader had known her long enough to know when she was amused, but didn't want to show it.
He's easy to care for. There's something vulnerable about him.
He confuses me.
How so?
Him hanging there with no way to save himself and bargaining with me the way he did was something else.
That impressed you?
Yeah.
He must have qualities. I've never known you to hesitate when something you wanted was right there for the taking, Trader.
I don't steal. You know that. If I had just taken him, that would have been like slavery. You know how I feel about that. I won't stand for it.
Having Harley watch over him is somehow different?
Trader rubbed his whiskers and felt irritated. He didn't care much for it when Basari made him think so hard.
It's different.
Why?
I need him to see that joining up with us could be good for him. He's able to find good salvage. I'm able to protect him better than those scavvies he was with. And I know where good salvage can be traded to get the best value for it.
What if he isn't the man who's been finding all the good salvage?
I'll kill him for telling me that he was. I don't much care for lying. You know that.
Harley skipped up beside Marsh and shoved the snake in his face.
Keep that thing away from me!
How can you be scared of a dead snake?
Basari frowned.
I can see why he's not enjoying the partnership.
Trader smiled.
We didn't agree on any enjoyable parts of the partnership.
But why put Harley on him? It's not just because she'll watch him closely.
Trader considered the question. He hadn't thought about it much at the time.
Because he worried her about the scorpions yesterday.
That bothered you?
Maybe.
Trader threw away the dregs of his coffee.
Ever since Vlad got killed outside of Sunbury on the Susquehanna River, Harley ain't been the same.
Well, Vlad was her companion even before you took those two on. She's grieving.
Grieving's gonna get her chilled.
Trader slipped his empty coffee cup into the attack wag and set it on the dashboard.
Watching over that scabby gives her something to do. She's talked to him more than she's talked to anybody for days.
Marsh is easy to talk to. He knows things. He's interesting.
Didn't know enough to save himself from becoming a mutie sacrifice.
I'm confident he'll surprise you.
Why?
Basari showed him a knowing smile that he often found bothersome.
Just a feeling.
We'll know soon enough.
Trader waved at the Scabby and Harley.
You two are with me.
Marsh frowned and walked toward the attack wag.
She tried to kill me.
Harley opened her mouth, but Trader interrupted.
No, she didn't. If she had tried to kill you, you'd be dead. Not that snake.
Harley beamed with pleasure. Marsh grimaced and looked at Harley.
What are you gonna do with that snake?
It's going in the stew pot.
She held up the headless snake a little proudly and moved it toward him like it was striking.
I got a big one. Got some fat on it. Probably from eating turtles and fish in that stream.
She shot Marsh a wicked side eye.
Maybe even a stoop scabby or two.
Give the snake to Doc.
Harley held the snake possessively.
Needs to be cleaned. Don't want the meat to spoil.
I can clean a snake.
With obvious reluctance, Harley handed over her prize.
Marsh, you're riding up front with me.
Why him?
Marsh shot the young woman a triumphant grin, and in that brief expression, the likable side of the scabby that Basari had pointed out shined like a freshly whetted knife's edge.
So if he tries anything, you can shoot him in the back of the head.
Marsh's grin faltered. Harley smiled broadly.
Okay.
At the wheel of the attack wag, with the tires humming over the rough highway and bumping through cracks and potholes, Trader drove and relaxed, even though they were in bandit territory. The encounter yesterday with the muties and stickies was a grim reminder of that. But when he was on the road and rolling, he was always more at peace. Moving meant he was alive. In the attack wag's mirror, the El Camino trailed close behind, and the cargo wag, smokestacks wreathed in black smoke, followed the new addition to the convoy. They rolled close to each other so no one in another wag could separate them. One day, Trader would get more wags. He would build the biggest trade convoy the Deathlands had ever seen. He just needed to get his hands on enough cargo to make it work, and enough fuel. He would go farther and faster than anyone ever had. That had been a goal ever since Trader had restored his first wag and secured his first trade. The profits, after all the costs, hadn't been much, but it had been enough to prove to him he could do it, and it proved that he loved trading more than anything. And mixing them up to make a balance fall on the plus side every time he made a run through the Deathlands, that excited him. Harley sat in the back seat beside Perez, who was the backup driver. Harley had one of her M9s in her lap and sang a nonsense song about killing scabbies that was probably meant to annoy Marsh.
Killing scabbies, watching them bleed.
Perez slept, which was what he normally did when he was in a wagon not driving. Jez sat on the rear deck seat and kept watch for ambushes along the sides of the highway, where tall trees climbed the surrounding mountains. In the passenger seat beside Trader, wearing round-lensed glasses he'd taken from the bag at his feet, Marsh flipped through a book and unfolded out small pieces of printed paper. He'd read the book and those papers, then he'd flip to what looked like a map, then he'd read some more. Like the glasses, the book had been in the bag Trader had recovered at the fight the day before.
What's that book about?
Marsh looked up like he wasn't the only one in the wag with a book.
Who? Me?
See anyone else in here reading?
Marsh looked around like there might have been someone else with a book. Then he glanced back at Trader.
It's not a book. It's a journal.
What's the difference?
Marsh changed positions in the seat and probably tried in vain to find a more comfortable way to sit. He was too banged up for comfort, even with Vasari's ointments. Trader had been just as disappointed in them at times. There was nothing left to do but wear through that period of soreness and stiffness.
A book is already filled with information. Pages tell a story or relate a bunch of facts or history. This,
Marsh held up the thick leather-bound book,
is supposed to be written in by someone. There's no story written yet. No information. The person who writes in it tells his or her story as he or she sees it. In this case, the writer is me. It's my story.
You're telling a story.
A boring story. Unless you write about how I saved you from the cottonmouth this morning. That was something to write about. Stop that snake just short of you getting bit.
Marsh pointedly ignored her.
I guess I'm telling my story. A little. I write about things I've seen, places I've been, people I've met. It's not so much a story as it is a record.
You could just remember those things.
I want to remember as much of it as I can. I can't always recall things I saw or heard. At least, not everything.
I do. Out on the road like this, trading goods like I do, I have to know where I am and who I'm gonna see to do business with while I'm there. I listen to stories people tell me about places I haven't been so I can figure out if I want to go there and what to look for if I do. I also need to know who might be in the market for goods I'm carrying.
Trader jerked a thumb over his shoulder at the cargo wag.
Doesn't do me much good to haul stuff around unless it's going somewhere. Burns a lot of fuel unless you're trading.
He reached for his canteen between the seats, took the cap off, and drank water. He capped it again and replaced it.
You should probably drink some water. Stay hydrated. Helps you heal faster.
Marsh turned his attention back to his journal, but he opened his canteen and took a few sips. Trader shook his head, and he wondered why he was looking out for the scabby. He could hear Vasari's voice whispering in his ear and mocking him.
You're turning into a mother hen, Trader.
He adjusted his sunglasses and told himself that he wasn't doing any such thing, that he was just looking out for an investment he made, same as any other cargo he'd picked up. But he grudgingly had to admit she was right about Marsh Folsom. He was different than any man Trader had met, and that was before he knew the scabby could read. He wasn't sure if that reading ability helped Marsh's value or hurt it. After watching the man this morning, Reading things really distracted him from paying attention to the world around him. That would be a liability. Stripped Wags and Rex littered the shoulders of the highway among the scrub trees. Taller mountains lay in the west. Some big Wags lay on their sides and had been cannibalized down to the chassis. Trader cataloged them automatically in case something was out there he might need. Or maybe he'd need to know where it was for somebody he met later who was looking for something. That kind of knowledge always came in handy. If the threat of the muties and stickies hadn't been in his face so much, and if they hadn't burned through so much ammo the day before, he might have stopped and taken a closer look at some of those things. He and Sanborn could strip parts quickly, but he kept rolling. Smallvilles like Norton died a slow death after the nuke cost. The folks who didn't die when the big earthshakers hit perished soon after from lack of food and clean water. Or they were killed by the Coldhearts who survived and chose to take from those who couldn't hang on to what little they had. Those weaker folks died quick, and when the Coldhearts didn't have anyone to prey on, a lot of them died too. Or they just went elsewhere to find more victims. Not many survivors had the know-how to get a wag running and keep it running. Parts and tires were hard to come by, and when a man found them, they were expensive. A man who did have mechanical skills, though, could make himself a fine living.
Don't know why you're bothering to write in your boring book. Ain't nobody knows how to read.
Some people do. It's a skill that hasn't completely been lost.
I tried it once. My mother, before she got rad sick and died, wanted me to learn. She was a reader. Read me all kinds of stories. She tried to teach me to read. All them letters just made my head spin. Bunch of foolishness, if you ask me.
Good thing I'm not asking you, then.
Who do you think is gonna read it?
When she got stuck on something, Harley was like a burr. She wouldn't let go. It was one of her most annoying traits, and it was one of her best.
I'm gonna read it. Like I said, I'm writing it for me. There are people, whether you think so or not, who would love to know the information I have inside this journal.
You ain't been enough places to fill a book. I know that because I know you don't know enough to keep yourself from getting captured by muties and stickies. Can't save yourself from cotton mouths? That's gonna be an awful short book.
Marcia's face flushed and his eyes narrowed. His breath got tight, and he turned on Harley.
What else is in that book?
Trader tried to break the tension between the two because he didn't want to listen to the continued bickering. Since he was talking, Harley would back off.
I saw other papers and maps.
Marsh looked back at Trader.
They're things I found to help me locate salvage.
You found salvage by reading those papers?
Sometimes.
You're not going to tell me there's a list of salvage and where to find it.
That was something Trader wouldn't believe. He'd never heard of that.
No, nothing like that, but it can be if you read between the lines and get creative.
There's nothing between the lines in a book. I know that much. Unless those glasses you're wearing let you see something I can't see.
No, it's not like that.
Marsh touched the glasses frames.
I can read without these. It's just better if I read with them. I don't get headaches as easily.
Tell me about the reading between the lines.
Marsh hesitated for a moment.
Hunting salvage through these papers is a lot like being a detective in an old mystery novel.
That means absolutely nothing to me.
Which part?
All of it. I've never heard of a detective, but I've got an idea about mystery stories. Old guys I've talked to in Gaudis have laid out some fine puzzlers over pints of Busthead on stormy nights when an acid rain blew through. Stories that are designed to make a man sit and think. They take a lot of pride in them. And then there are religious groups on the fringes of vills and even in some vills that talk about mysteries made up by whoever it is they worship.
No, it's not like that either. Barons have men and women who try to find out who stole something from the Baron, or maybe killed someone the Baron favored and didn't want killed.
That's a sec captain's job.
Trader had known some hardcore men and women who didn't flinch when it came to avenging whatever Baron they followed, or handing down that Baron's punishments.
All right, let's go with that. I look at these papers like I'm a sec captain hunting for something that will help me find whoever the Baron sent me after. Like this one.
Trader glanced at the paper filled with lines of print he couldn't read. He didn't want to admit his lack to Marsh, though, because it wasn't any of the scabby's business. Admitting to inabilities weakened a man's defensive strategy, and maybe even his offensive ones as well.
I'm driving.
Trader looked away from the paper.
What is that?
It's a newspaper article.
Never heard of it.
Marsh looked dumbstruck.
You haven't heard of newspapers?
Ain't had many folks ask for newspapers on the routes I run to do my trading.
Yeah, probably not.
Except to use his outhouse paper.
Newspapers are hard to find. They were a dying enterprise even before the new cost, but they were used to keep readers up on the events that took place internationally, nationally, and locally. If you know what to look for, and I do, they're chock full of information even 80 years later. This article.
Marsh held up the paper again.
Is how I found out about Conrad Yekel.
Is that a baron? Never heard of him.
Mm-mm. Yekel was an arms dealer.
Trader shook his head.
Not in Norton. That ville doesn't have an arms dealer. That place is too dangerous. It would cost too much to try to set up a shop. There are gaudy houses there, because every place has a gaudy house or two. They change owners sometimes.
The conversation had roused Perez in the back.
There's not any good gaudy houses in Norton. Can't go to any of them there. Sal's or Romeo's or the Dancing Queen. And you're taking a chance on catching the worst case of crotch rot you'll ever get.
Yeah, I don't traffic with gaudy houses.
Marsha's face flushed.
Gaudy sluts probably charge you too much. Or won't have anything to do with you, because you're so ugly.
Marsh shook his head.
Conrad Yekel isn't an arms dealer now. He died 80 years ago. Probably in the new cost or shortly thereafter.
What?
Trader's anger escaped him for a moment, and he wanted to reach across and slap the younger man for wasting his time. At the same time, he was mad at himself for not realizing a newspaper story printed 80 years ago wouldn't be about anyone still alive.
Let me start over. According to this article...
Marsh held up the piece of a page he'd torn from a copy of the Coalfield Progress several days earlier. Back when his crew had been hungry, but they'd been alive.
Yekel had been arrested by the ATF for illegally selling weapons to other criminals.
The paper fluttered in the slipstream of wind rocketing through the Humvee's open windows. The newspaper was so old and thin he feared it would rip to shreds. He protected it with his free hand.
What do you mean, arrested?
In that moment, Marsh realized the morass he'd stepped into. Even though he had a pretty good view of the world before Skydark, most folks living in the Deathlands these days didn't. Some of them had been told half-remembered tales about how things used to be, but most didn't bother to remember those stories because that wasn't the world they were living in. Without an education, most folks had no sense of history or how things worked outside of their own spheres of operation. When bad times came to the world, folks tended to forget everything that didn't help with their current everyday needs. The new cost wasn't the first time such a loss in history and science had happened, and social hierarchies had been forgotten. Oftentimes, folks tended to just move on from worldly matters if they didn't suit their vision of existence. At the library, Marsh's parents had trained him from birth about the previous world. When the time came, when the world was on the road to recovery, as they believed it was supposed to happen, they were supposed to help turn the Deathlands around into a good place again. They'd still believed that would happen. Marsh had stopped believing that the day he'd found their bodies. He tucked that memory away before it got too anchored in his mind and wouldn't let him focus on anything else.
Before Skydark, folks who lived in a town were told what to do by governments.
You mean like barons?
No. Governments, at least the ones in this country, tended to be ruled by committee.
Perez frowned.
A bunch of people. Really smart people. A whole lot of people. Most of them had to agree on what they wanted to do before they could get it done.
Sounds like a foolish way to run things. You can't carry that much fat on a crew. Crew has to stay lean and mean to maintain focus. Otherwise, the members will get bogged down and die. I make the decisions in this crew. No one else. That makes us lean and able to act quickly.
The world was different then. A lot more people lived in one spot, and they had to agree to social conventions for that to work out. Let's try this. Say some barons, like Baron Crawford.
Who's Baron Crawford?
Marsh shrugged.
It's just a name I made up to make an example.
All right.
Suppose this made-up Baron Crawford found out one of his men was selling weapons.
A lot of men do. Folks always want weapons.
Only Baron Crawford said no one in his barony could sell weapons but him.
That's different.
Perez rubbed his chin.
Most likely the Baron would just chill that man and have done with it.
Marsh nodded.
Before the new cost, before a Baron could touch him, a man had to be tried and found guilty. A man was guaranteed rights. He had to understand what his community thought was right and wrong. Once that was proven, only then could the community punish him.
I've heard about things like that. Never believed the world was ever like that. A Baron does whatever a Baron wants to. The Baron gives folks rights, and when he wants to, he takes them away.
Well, the world was different back then. People were more equal. So, Yakel was arrested by the police.
The what?
The police.
Marsh thought about how to best translate the concept.
The sec force that worked for the Baron. They caught Yakel and threw him in jail, but he bonded out.
What do you mean, bonded?
He put up trade goods to guarantee he was going to show up before the Baron on an appointed date.
If this weapons dealer is going to just get out, why lock him up in the first place? Kill him and be done with it.
And if he was guilty and got a chance to run, he'd cut loose and run. It would be stupid to stay.
Marsh was on the verge of a mental collapse. This wouldn't have been so hard if Marsh's audience had some knowledge of the world before Skydark.
Because that was their system. That was how they got things done.
Stoop system.
Yeah, well, it worked for them most of the time. Maybe it would have worked this time, too. A time was set up for Yakel to go before the Baron. Before he could, the Earthshakers dropped, and Norton, most of the town anyway, died shortly thereafter. A few days ago, while my crew and I were hunting salvage in a place called Fort Blackmore, we found a mostly intact post office.
Harley shook her head.
I think you're making this stuff up as you go. I never heard of a post office.
Quiet! Let him talk.
Harley flopped back in her seat and aimed her M9 at Marsh. Though it was difficult, Marsh ignored her. He had Traitor's attention now. The man understood the possibilities that were there. Maybe he didn't know about how the world had been, but he could see how these details could add up to something worth knowing in the world they were living in now. Marsh was hopeful, and some of the knot in his stomach released its stranglehold on his nerves.
A post office was a place where folks got mail. They wrote letters to each other, sent gifts. But it was also a place where they kept newspapers. While we were stuck there, I read up on Yakel's case.
Why?
Because he was an arms dealer. Like you said, you can trade guns anywhere. Everybody wants them.
He had those guns 80 years ago.
That's right. But according to the stories I read about in his criminal case, investigators suspected he had a weapons cache that they hadn't been able to find.
You think that cache and those weapons are still out there?
I do.
Where?
Marsh flipped his journal open again and took out another paper.
I convinced the crew I was with that I was onto something. They believed me.
They were stooped. Look where it got them. Hanging up like hams in a smokehouse.
Marsh ignored her because he knew he had Traitor's full attention. At least, whatever part of his attention wasn't watching the road and checking the surrounding terrain.
We found the courthouse in Wise, about 25 miles north of Fort Blackmore. We followed the highway for a while, and some of it was gone. But gradually, we worked our way around to Wise. Once we located the courthouse, we had to dig in because the building had collapsed. It wasn't too hard because others had been there before us. We just had to clear out where others had gone.
Then there was nothing there. Whoever got in there would have cleaned it out.
They were looking for easy salvage. Guns, food, other supplies. All of that was gone. But I was looking for information about Yakel. Nobody else was. Took me a while to find it, but I did.
Marsh paused, then realized Traitor wasn't going to ask him what he'd found because he probably couldn't even imagine what that might be.
I turned up property records. Even when the world ran on computers, courthouses were required to keep physical copies and records of properties. The computer files went away, but the paperwork remained. Keep in mind, all the weapons Yakel had on him and at his house were taken, confiscated. But the district attorney, Baron's sec chief, believed they'd missed most of what Yakel had, but she thought his hidden cash was somewhere in or around Norton.
What happened to the guns they took from this guy?
They went into police lockup. They were some of the first places people broke into when they realized they needed weapons to survive. But nobody on that investigation thought they'd gotten all Yakel's weapons.
Marsh made sure he had their attention. It reminded him of how Boggs and Corrine had trusted him, and a worm of unease wriggled through him.
I think that cash is still out there waiting to be found.
The road hum filled the Humvee for a moment, because everybody, including Harley, was listening.
Is it?
Marsh hesitated. It would be easy to change his mind, to tell Trader that he wasn't as sure as he wanted to be. That was actually the truth. But he was curious to know if all his research and guesswork was right. He could say no, and Trader would probably leave. But then Marsh would never know if he was right. He'd spent a lot of time to arrive at the right answer. He believed he had the truth of the matter. He had talked Corrine and Boggs into risking and eventually forfeiting their lives to find out. He couldn't be wrong. He didn't want to be wrong. He had to know.
I think it is. I'd bet my life on it.
He couldn't do any less than that. Corrine, Boggs, and the others had bet their lives on it, had come all this way, and they'd never gotten inside that building. Trader nodded, stone-faced.
Then, that's the bet.
Marsh returned his attention to his journal and hoped that he was right. He had to be right. By the time the convoy reached the address Marsh directed them to, or maybe where the address used to be before the nuke cost, Trader's mind was spinning with possibilities. He was more excited than he had been in a long time, and he knew most of it was what he was picking up off Marsh Folsom. The man believed the story he had told. He believed those weapons were still hidden away out there, and that they were waiting for someone canny enough to find them. But was Marsh believing his own findings? Or did he just believe he couldn't be wrong? Trader wanted to know if he was following a man who knew what he was doing, or a man who couldn't believe he could make a mistake until it, like a booby trap, blew up in his face. When he allowed himself to believe Marsh's story was true, Trader intended to believe the man was canny enough to find that cash. If the weapons were there, Trader could change his luck on this run and build faster toward his hope of having more wags and more crew. He pulled the attack wag to a stop in front of the shattered remains of a three-story stone building on a corner lot. Foundations of houses ran in rows on two sides of the building and showed along the two cross streets. The residences had been family homes, and based on how little of them remained, probably made of wood. During the cold months, survivors who had lived through Skydark, or travelers who had come along later searching for salvage, had stripped the wood from the structures and used it for campfires to stay warm. Stones had been stripped from the three-story building, and the large display windows held only a few jagged shards of glass. A long sign, weathered and beaten by the elements, the new cost and past violence, ran across the front of the building.
This is it.
Marsh stared at the building.
At least, this should be it.
Trader glanced at the broken streets with ruins in all directions, and let the attack wag idle.
Jez!
I'm watching. There are people out there watching us.
Trader saw them too. He laid his right hand on the Armalite AR-10 lying in its customary position between the seats and canted forward over the dashboard. He noted the onlookers and their positions. Two men were paired up, two houses down along the street to the west. Two women and another man all worked the ruins for salvage independently along the south street.
I count five.
Me too.
I count five.
I'm watching the scabby, in case he decides to act stoop.
If there's five out there, there's more we ain't seeing.
I'm watching over you. I'm ready any way you want to play it.
Staring at the building in front of them like he was hypnotized, Marsh opened his door and tried to get out. The Trader grabbed the scabby's arm and yanked him back inside.
Wait, damn it! You can't go rushing out there and get yourself shot.
What are you talking about?
There are 5 people out on the street.
And you've got 17 men and women with you. Not to mention bigger guns. I don't think you should be worried about 5 people simply trying to find a way to survive another day.
It's not them I worry about. It's all the ones that might be with them that we don't see that concern me.
What would bring them here? You people have guns. Lots of guns. Those people out there would want to make trouble with you.
Maybe these folks haven't left because their homes are here. Folks will fight to protect their homes.
This is a blown-up building. These people won't care about it. They've probably already taken everything that was in there that was worth anything.
Are you saying those guns aren't here?
Figger knotted Marsh's shirt in his fist so tightly that it threatened to choke him. The possibility that they'd come all this way stoked the anger Trader kept banked inside himself. That rage almost got away from him before he was able to throttle it down. Stopping here risked a lot, his Wags and his crew. He'd already risked enough for Marsh Folsom. Yet, he'd drawn cards on this hand. If he folded early and didn't play out that hand, drawing those cards, finding Marsh Folsom but not believing in him, would mean nothing. Trader stared into the man's green eyes. Anger stirred within those depths, but he was afraid, too. And there was something else. Even though Trader was holding him down and looming over him, Marsh still tried to pull steadily away.
No.
Marsh maintained eye contact with Trader.
No, I didn't say that. The guns are here.
Why are the guns here?
Harley, Perez, and Jez were all silent and waited to see what happened. Trader didn't lose control in front of his crew. Not often. He worked at maintaining his calm. A leader was calm at all times, until it wasn't time to be calm anymore. This wasn't one of those times. Not yet.
Because the guns have got to be here.
Desperation gleamed in Marsh's green eyes. He was a man who sorely wanted to believe.
That's right. Them weapons have to be here for us, or you're gonna get chilled.
Marsh swallowed hard, and his Adam's apple scraped along the backs of Trader's knuckles.
They're here, Trader. I'm right about those weapons. I know I am.
How do you know?
Yekel owned this building under another name. The district attorney wasn't able to prove that, but I tracked some of Yekel's business dealings through the documents I found.
Why didn't this district attorney do that?
She had to proceed under rules of investigation. She had to connect the dots to present her findings to a judge, then to a jury. All I had to do was look. I didn't have any rules.
Why were you so lucky?
Only part of it was luck.
Marsh licked his lips.
I'm good at what I do, Trader. I know you haven't seen that yet, but I am. I'm the best information ferret my parents ever trained. Most of those salvaged goods that you'd heard my crew and I had traded to folks you'd run into, the ones that had you killing muties and stickies only yesterday to save me, this is how I found them, through my investigation. You're gonna have to trust me, because I don't have time to teach you all this research and history.
Trader nodded. Having to trust Marsh bothered him. Finding goods the way the scabby said he did it was foreign to Trader, but it was new, too. He'd never heard of it. And there was no discounting the fact that Marsh Folsom and his crew had been successful with it.
I went through the property records I got from the courthouse. The district attorney, the SEC captain, looked at some of those records, too. She didn't have as much time as I did. There was enough salvage around that my crew and I spent a few days. I spent those nights with those papers I took from the courthouse. I got the trial records, I got property deeds. I put more together than the district attorney. That's what put me onto some of the properties Yekel owned. He was clever. He had to be to get away with what he was doing for so long. He knew a lot of ways to hide what he was doing. The district attorney didn't know about this building until it was too late.
Him owning this building doesn't mean anything.
They found some of Yekel's other stashes around town. Small caches of weapons. Not like what I know has to be here for him to do the sheer numbers the investigators were guessing at.
Trader barely kept up with all the strange terms Marsh used, but he was good at understanding the gist of things.
Those numbers could be wrong.
Uh-uh. Yekel had millions of dollars in the bank. He had to be turning sales regularly.
Then why did he live in a small hole in the wall like this ville? There were bigger cities back then. I've seen pictures of them.
This is where he grew up. He was a soldier. He fought in the Gulf War.
What? I don't know what that was.
One of the wars that were fought over in the Middle East. Do you know what that is?
I've heard of it. I've traded some weapons that were made in the Middle East. Israeli arms, Desert Eagles, Soviet RPG-7s, Indian assault rifles.
Yeah, good enough. Yekel got involved with arms dealers while in the Gulf War and did a lot of his business abroad. However, he also sold a lot of weapons to militia groups who wanted to separate from the United States at the time. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms was the agency who discovered that bit of business. Yekel came back to Norton after he was betrayed and nearly killed by an ex-partner overseas. He felt safe here.
Trader didn't understand everything Marsh was talking about, but he understood how a man who'd been betrayed by partners and wanted safety might return to his home. He would know the familiar dangers there, and he would know the lay of the land. He'd be able to see anyone coming for him. Predators did that too. Much of what Marsh talked about was different than anything Trader knew, but the man spoke with such conviction, it was difficult not to believe he was speaking the truth. Folks lived differently before Skydark, before the Earthshakers had pounded the world into a new, broken and battered shape. Whole ways of life had changed. But if those weapons were somehow still here, somehow still buried in that broken building, recovering them would change Trader's life and the lives of his crew. It would push him closer to trading for his next wag and getting more crew. Marsh Folsom talked like he knew a lot about the way life was lived before the new cost.
You think he built himself a hide inside this building? Somewhere to conceal the guns from anyone who might come looking?
Marsh nodded.
Yeah, this place has a basement. I found the blueprints in the courthouse. Like I said, I got lucky with some of the records. Some of it I just guessed had to be there based on other empirical evidence. As a researcher, I could guess. I was trained to make guesses, informed guesses. The district attorney had to prove something to act on it. They had a lot of laws back then. Even after 80 years, a lot of the papers I found were intact, more or less.
Why this building?
Marsh shook his head.
I don't know. Maybe it held some emotional connection for Yekel. Maybe it was just available at the time he needed it. Back when Yekel was still doing most of his business overseas, he bought this building under another name and had it renovated. He put in a German restaurant on the first floor and rented office space above it that would help pay off his loan. Between that income and whatever the restaurant brought in, he was probably making a profit. But I think he was using it to hide his illegal profits.
Trader didn't know how profits could be illegal unless a man cheated another man out of them. Even then, most of the time, there weren't any laws. There were just men who killed other men for taking from them, or for trying to take from them. Trader chose not to ask questions because he'd already been sitting there doing nothing too long. He didn't want to shift focus.
Tell me about the weapons.
The renovations. Yekel spent a lot of money on rewiring and replumbing the building to get it up to code. The basement was made over into a storage area and had to be rebuilt.
What kind of storage area?
Food and other supplies for the restaurant. Large walk-in freezer and cooler.
Marsh swallowed.
There's a lot of space down there. All that equipment had to be brought in and set up. That gave Yekel plenty of time to reconfigure that space however he liked.
A lot of room to hide something.
More excitement flared within Trader. He recognized opportunities when he saw them.
That doesn't mean he did.
Marsh looked at Trader.
Tell me you haven't built hiding places for weapons and goods into your vehicles.
Trader didn't say anything, and he didn't allow anything to show on his face. But the scabby was right. Trader had built hides for himself on the wags that no one except him knew about.
See? A man in your line of work and in Yekel's. That kind of man doesn't miss opportunities when they're there, and he'll make them for himself whenever he can.
Keep talking.
There was a woman who offered testimony to the district attorney about some of the renovations done to the basement. She was an accountant Yekel used to move his money around. She'd gotten caught up in Yekel's criminal activity and was in trouble with the district attorney and Yekel because she was stealing money from him. She knew too much, and Yekel wasn't going to tolerate a thief anyway. He was going to kill her. She wanted to make a deal to get herself somewhere safe.
If the sec captain knew about the basement, she would have gotten the weapons.
No.
Marsh shook his head.
She was told about the weapons on January 19th, in the evening. The district attorney needed to get a warrant, permission, from a judge to investigate the restaurant premises. That was late Friday afternoon. She had to wait until courthouse business opened up on Monday morning.
Then why didn't she?
Because the world ended at noon on that following Saturday before that Monday. The Earthshakers blew everything up. Yekel and his weapons no longer mattered. Folks lost their families, their lives, their homes. It was chaos for years after that.
Marsh nodded at the neighborhood on the other side of the attack wag's cracked windshield.
It's still chaos.
Trader lifted the Armalite AR-10 and opened his door.
Wait here. I'm gonna do some recon. Jez!
I got you, Trader. Don't leave my line of sight.
Corky?
Yeah, Trader.
You're with me. We're gonna look things over.
A raw-boned young man clambered from the El Camino. Corky had grown up in a labor camp working for a baron named Harvey Cotter in Front Royal, up in the northern part of what had been Virginia. Trader avoided the area because the current baron had killed two of his brothers and married his stepmother after she'd murdered her husband. That kind of crazy was something Trader fought to keep himself well shy of. Corky wore a bulletproof vest that looked ragged but still serviceable. Whip scars showed on his face, one of them close enough to his right eye that it could have blinded him, and others showed on his arms. Dungarees covered his legs, but there were scars there too. He never talked about getting them. He kept his dark hair razored to his scalp. The scars there stood out in proud flesh. He carried an AK-47 that never left his side. He hung out with the rest of the crew, but his blue eyes always looked haunted, and he didn't get close to anyone. Without a word, Trader and Corky fell into that natural tandem that they'd developed over the last 15 months. When times got hard and supplies ran short, Corky and Trader hunted game. The rest of the crew were good hunters too, but Trader had never seen anyone like the young man to his left. Corky was a ghost in the wilderness, and he could disappear in an urban sprawl just as easily. Together, they swept the street and walked along two sides of the building to check anyone who might have been nearby. An old woman with an ancient shopping cart stood in the shadows of a building across the street. Her head was wrapped in a dirty scarf that shadowed her features. A dog rode in the cart, or maybe the old woman had killed it and was taking it back to her squat to eat. As soon as she met Trader's stare, she turned away with her cart and disappeared into the shadows of the ruins of the buildings. By the time Trader and Corky had reached the rear of the building, the sound of the cart had faded. The alley behind the building was narrow and strewn with rubble. The buildings behind it had been one-story shops. Only empty shells remained of those places.
Nobody's here.
What do you think about Marsh Folsom's story about weapons being hidden away in this place?
Corky thought for a moment and took a quick glance at Trader.
Only one way to find out.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
When Trader turned and headed back to the front of the building without getting shot, Marsh relaxed. He hadn't known how tense he'd gotten, but he had contained some of his anger because looking at the building, thinking about all the history, had made him more curious than ever. The story he'd gotten about those guns had kept him up nights. The possibility had excited him. More than that, actually finding them would have proven his research tendencies were worth something. Boggs hadn't truly believed, and had only gotten desperate. Marsh also wished Corrine were there instead of somewhere else, missing her face. They'd gotten jumped by Jubal and his band only a short distance back down the way Trader had brought them into town. They'd been creeping through the wreckage of buildings and trying to find the right one. Only a few of those structures had enough signage left to identify what businesses they'd been. Maybe if they had made it here, maybe if those guns were really there, maybe Corrine and Boggs and the others would still be alive. Maybe Marsh wouldn't be Trader's partner. Or maybe Trader would have killed Corrine and Boggs and the others. Maybe Marsh would be dead too, instead of just a prisoner. Even though he'd been aware of Trader's return, the opening of the door startled Marsh enough to jerk away from it. Trader shot him a look and the dark eyebrows lifted slightly. Then he shook his head.
All right. Harley, everything looks safe enough. We're gonna go have a look at that basement.
He shifted his gaze to Marsh.
You move when I say you do and where I say you do, and you listen to me at all times.
Okay.
Marsh centered himself. He made himself as forceful as he could.
I need a weapon.
No.
The lack of hesitation before the answer was offensive, as hard and as sharp as a slap in the face.
What? Wait! You can't seriously expect me to go out there without a way to defend myself.
It's safe enough. I just checked on that.
Doesn't mean it's gonna stay safe.
You've got us protecting you.
What? You could get killed.
Trader shook his head.
That's never gonna happen.
You're not invincible.
I know that. Instead, I'm careful. That's why you're never gonna find me hanging from sacrifice posts and headed for a muty stew pot.
Since he wasn't getting anywhere, Marsh decided to take another tack.
Why can't I have my weapons?
Because I don't trust you.
You can trust me.
Trader peered hard at Marsh.
Can I? You got your last crew killed.
Marsh opened his mouth to deny that, stared into the twin images of himself in Trader's mirror lenses, and spotted the painful guilt stamped on his face. Corrine Boggs and the others had died because of him.
So I have to trust you?
Yes.
Why would I trust you?
Because I haven't killed you yet.
Marsh tried, but he couldn't think of anything to say to that. Trader stepped out onto the broken street. Green grass grew in the cracks, and weeds stood tall in places.
Harley, stay on him. Make sure he doesn't get hurt.
What if he tries to get away?
Shoot him.
Trader turned to Marsh.
If you run, just so you know, that will nullify the partnership you made with me. And Harley will park a bullet in your brain pan.
I won't run.
Marsh bit back the angry retort that ricocheted inside his skull. He wouldn't run. Not until he knew he had a definite way of escape and a proper destination.
I won't miss if you run.
Trader smiled at the young woman. Sitting there in that seat, a prisoner for all intents and purposes, Marsh was so outraged he was shaking. And he hadn't been that furious in a long time. Except the day before, when he was mad at himself for getting his crew killed.
This is not a partnership, you arrogant bastard. And as soon as I get the chance, I'm gone. To hell with you. And to hell with Harley and her taunting.
Move.
Harley got out first, and Marsh got out as well. He picked up his backpack and strapped it on with shaking hands. Marsh regained control of himself. He focused on the broken building in front of them, focused on its structure, and that consumed him. He started forward.
Stop.
Marsh looked at him.
You follow me. I'm going to clear the way.
As he looked up at the building, he wondered if he was going to die there. Today, in the next few minutes. Now that the decision was made, Trader burned with excitement. He wanted to know if he was right about Marsh Folsom. He also didn't like the fact that so many of the folks living nearby were paying so much attention to them. A wag resting anywhere was an easier target than a wag that was moving. He didn't intend to spend any more time here than he had to.
Jez, you're our eyes out here.
Roger that.
Perez, you're behind the wheel.
Perez climbed out of the attack wag.
You sure you don't need me inside?
I want you driving if we have to get out of here in a hurry. I want you behind the wheel so you can keep Jez in play with her rifle in case we need to be extracted.
Perez nodded and climbed behind the attack wag's steering wheel. He settled an AK-47 into the space between the front seats.
Hand me one of the radios.
Perez reached into the storage compartment between the seats and brought out a handheld, scratched and battered walkie-talkie. Trader took the radio, activated it, and twisted the squelch control. The batteries were good. He checked them that morning. He clipped the radio to his belt. They used the radio sparingly because finding batteries for them was hard. Finding batteries that had been stored correctly so they still had a charge was harder still. Rechargeable batteries that could be powered up by solar energy or a 110 outlet conversion were the hardest of all to find. Even those gave out after a time. When they were in the basement, the radio might not work, but if something went wrong, Trader wasn't going to stay in that underground room, and that radio was coming with him. He'd get his team topside quick as he could, and the radio could come in handy.
Perez, if something goes wrong, you get these wags clear. I won't have them lost. We'll figure out how to meet up later if we can't make it happen then.
You got it. If something goes wrong, you get back out here and we'll all leave.
Trader relaxed now that he was moving, planning, and strategizing, and there was a prize in sight worth killing for.
Lamotte, you keep an eye on the streets. Sanborn.
The big man clambered out of the cargo wag with a Remington 870 shotgun canted over one broad shoulder.
Yeah. You're with us. Muramatsu and Walquist, you're with us too.
Two younger men, one Asian and the other a bald black man with a fierce goatee and armed with assault rifles, climbed out of the El Camino.
Bring the excavation gear.
Muramatsu and Walquist trotted to the cargo wag and opened one of the lockers mounted underneath the trailer. They returned in short order with heavy olive drab military bags nearly as long as they were tall. Slender, hard shapes showed inside the bags.
Want me?
I want you up there.
Trader pointed to the top of the building.
There's a stairwell that will take you up.
He indicated the door beside the restaurant.
The wags will keep watch over the front of the building. I want you to watch the alley behind us and keep moving. Take one of the good pairs of binocs and a radio.
All right.
Corky retreated to the cargo wag. Trader took a two-handed grip on the Armalite AR-10 and looked back at Marsh.
Follow me. Stay 6 feet back. When I'm moving, you're moving.
Marsh nodded. After a final glance at the surrounding streets, Trader stepped through a large hole in the side of the building. His crew followed. It was time to see if his investment in the Scabby's rescue was going to turn out on the right side of the balance sheet.